Now, our theme at the moment is on resetting the compass. And this is an interesting one because it's getting us to think about how we think about different aspects of life in terms of how God sees it, into using the scripture to help us to come to understand that. And so I guess in some ways these sort of messages are more sort of like teaching messages. They're just teaching about what does God say about that and then how do we think about that? And then we need to decide for ourselves, are we aligned to biblical thinking or not? And so that's the challenge that we have in resetting our compass. We ask, are we on that true north path? And so that's today we're going to think about that, and I'll talk in a moment about what that's about. After we sing the last song today and pray the blessing over you, you're going to step out into over 100 waking hours of the rest of your week. So what connection do you see between Sunday worship and Monday work? In other words, what does faith look like on Mondays? As Joel introduced to us at the beginning of the series a couple of weeks ago, if we want to live the Jesus way, we have to reset our compass to true north. Because if we're on the magnetic north trajectory, we're not going to end up where we planned, where we were going. Hugh talked about it last week in relation to relationships, in terms of relationships. And if we have to work out, are we heading on that true north trajectory in how we view and understand and outwork our relationships? And today I'm asking you to take your compasses out and check if they're set correctly regarding work. Interesting topic for me to have. It's good. I'm glad because it's been so good to look at this and understand it in a fresh way this morning. So to be able to determine if we are on the true north path, then we have to actually look at the mindsets around magnetic north thinking and true north thinking. And so this morning I'm going to look at a couple of these ways of thinking about work and see, you have to decide, am I on this trajectory or this one? So here's some. One of the mindsets around magnetic north thinking is that the more control and power you gain at work, the more successful you are. In other words, if you have got you control a lot of things and have a lot of power to make decisions, then you are successful. But the true north thinking says we actually don't go to work to get others to serve us, but we go to work to serve others. In Galatians 5:13b, it says, "Serve one another humbly in love." And 1 Peter 4:10 says, "Each of you should use whatever gift you have received to serve others as faithful stewards of God's grace in its various forms." So we don't go to work to gain power, but actually to empower, regardless of what role we have. Another way of thinking in terms of magnetic north suggests that you should elevate your status. Work gives you that opportunity to make a name for yourself. Tim Keller, who's a well-respected theologian, and wrote a book called Every Good Endeavor. And in this, he explores this magnetic north thinking. He says that modern society has set up false idols of self-image and status, which have misdirected our motivations for work. Like the builders of the Tower of Babel, who said, "Let us build ourselves a city and a tower with its top in the heavens, and let us make a name for ourselves." People today work to gain status or to define themselves socially or financially, seeing work as a way to get ahead in the world for their own benefit. But True North says we go to work not to make a name for ourselves, but actually to make a name for God. Work is a means of worship. And the word worship, when broken down, is worth-ship. It's the way we ascribe worth to God. And Paul helps us to understand this in terms of work in Colossians 3:23, where he says, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord and not for men," or some translations say, "not for human masters." What this means is that all work we do is God's work. If you are meeting legitimate human needs, regardless of what those needs are, then you are working for God. We don't have to try and work out, and this is a really helpful thing to remember, we don't have to try and work out what is secular and what is sacred. Everything is sacred because the work is what we were created to do, and when we do it well, our work brings honour and glory to God. Magnetic law says that work is all about money, how much you get paid, making sure you get reimbursed well for the work you've done so that you can have the possessions that you want. But True North says, this is a bit countercultural, we go to work not primarily to make a living, but to earn an eternal reward. Colossians 3 goes on to say, after it says about whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord and not for human masters. Since you know that you'll receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward, it's the Lord you are serving. So think about it. Your daily work as a teacher, a banker, a builder, a doctor, a gardener, a coffee maker, a parent, and so on. All of that counts for eternity. That's significant. Now, I'm not saying that earning an income is wrong. In fact, actually, God made us with a desire to profit from our work. But it can be a dangerous driver if it becomes an obsession. It's all about making money. Or is not pursued in the way that God intended. It can actually drive us to overwork at the cost of our own personal well-being and that of our family, or support an attitude that is self-serving and not God-honoring. It becomes all about me. Our culture actually drives us towards magnetic north for work, because the prevailing thinking in our culture about work is around power and status, income and output. People feel valued if they can say how much they've done. And it's actually the focus of many motivational books, podcasts, all of the speakers. These people actually make millions of dollars out of this, making people understand how to get on the magnetic north trajectory. We don't want to end up there. And if we don't want to end up there, we need to reset our compass to true north. And to do this, we need to accept that our daily work is significant to God and His kingdom, whether we're leading a company or leading a church, whether we're changing a tire or changing a nappy, whether we're making a sales pitch or sharing Christ with a co-worker. It all matters to God. Jesus said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and all your soul, and all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment." Now think about that verse, and think about the verse where I spoke before. It says, if whatever you do, work at it with all your heart. If our work remains disconnected from our spiritual life, reconciling the commandment to love God with all our heart and to work with all our heart actually becomes impossible. We only have one heart. And if we're giving it all to God, there's none left over to give to work. Or if we're giving it all to work, there's none left over to give to God if they are disconnected, if we separate the secular from the sacred. But if our work and our worship is not disconnected, what we do is that we devote ourselves to work with all of our heart, a heart that loves God completely. If we do this, then every task we undertake is done with the desire to bring glory to God, with complete devotion, as a profound act of love and worship to Him. What a privilege to be able to do that. When we set our compass to true north, there is no conflict with loving God with one's entire being and dedicating oneself entirely to our work, because they're actually one and the same. Interconnected expressions of faith and devotion. But when we separate the secular and the sacred, we will end up on the magnetic north trajectory. Our culture is bent on pursuing work-life balance. However, I think it's impossible to bring life into proper balance apart from viewing work as important to God. If I believe that my work is separate to God, then this mindset puts all of the responsibility for my work on my shoulders, which makes it hard to walk away from work at the end of the day and focus on any other responsibilities you've got and not feel weighted down, and certainly makes the idea of work-life balance an impossibility. If I believe that my work, where I spend most of my waking hours, is separate from God, then I will operate independently of Him, and God will simply become an add-on leisure time option in my life, for which I may or may not make room, depending on how much time I've got left after work. Now, if you're struggling to come to terms with this thinking, that faith and work are totally interconnected, you're not alone, because Jesus' disciples, who were with Jesus every day, had a bit of a disconnect between faith and work. Listen to how Luke records their story. One day, Jesus said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat and set out. As they sailed, he fell asleep. A squall came down on the lake so that the boat was being swamped and they were in great danger. The disciples went and woke him, saying, "Master, Master, we're going to drown." He got up and rebuked the wind and the raging waters. The storm subsided and all was calm. "Where is your faith?" he asked his disciples. In fear and amazement, they asked one another, "Who is this? He commands even the winds and the waters, and they obey him." So why did Jesus confront the disciples like this? Why did he say, "Where is your faith?" I think it's because at least four of them were professional fishermen. They were in the world that they knew and understood, probably the last place they ever dreamed of needing God. They were experienced. They knew how to be great fishermen. Sure, they knew that Jesus could heal people, he could feed multitudes, he could preach a great sermon and change water into wine. But what did faith have to do with boats and sailing? Their work. Only when they had no other options left did they call on him. But that day, those professional fishermen learned in no uncertain terms that Jesus was the Lord of their workplace as well as the Lord of their synagogue. In their boat was a man who had more ability than all of their combined abilities, experience, and expertise they'd gained from years of working those waters. They also learned that he was not only able, but he was willing to bring his power to bear in their workplace. So what can you and I take away from this? Well, for one thing, Jesus' power is not only reserved for mission projects in third world countries or from designated religious activities here. His power applies to boats and big waves and other real life stuff that we deal with every day. And secondly, he is always there, ready to move beyond our weaknesses, beyond our inadequate resources, beyond our limited thinking, and bring his power to bear in our ordinary parts, the ordinary parts of our lives, as well as those most challenging parts. The fact is, our work is important to God. And not only does he expect us to take our faith to work, he wants us to be absolutely dependent on him in our work. So with that mindset, the idea of work-life balance becomes a possibility because we have the power of God working in and through us in everything that we do, including our work. And the truth is, we don't need to strive to achieve a work-life balance because our life will always be in balance when Christ is at the centre. Magnetic North says, "Work is something I have to do in my strength." True North says, "Apart from God, I can do nothing." And with man, this is impossible, but with God, all things are possible. I have so many people that say to me, "Pam, how do you do all that you do?" I do it this way. It's all for God. I don't have to try and separate and say this bit's over here and then have I got enough time to do this bit over here? I don't do that. All my life is for God, every bit of it. And so I don't have this competition going on in my heart because it's for God and He leads me and He gives me the strength for what He calls me to do. If He's given me the capability and the capacity to do something that He's called me, then I can trust Him that He will provide everything that I need. And He does. And He's done it for years. Next year I'm 70. And I don't feel like that. I feel like I'm maybe 40 or something. And I should be feeling different, but I don't. I feel like I've still got energy and drive. And that's why I say I'm not retiring. I'm refiring because God's got the next season for me. He's got the next thing. It's all for Him. Do I get tired? Yeah, I do. That's okay. It's okay to be tired. And God actually talks to us about this. And so today I can't talk about work without talking about rest. Because God says that we need to rest. The two are inextricably linked. Just as God gives us work to do, He also calls us to rest from our labor. Work gives us the opportunity for us to partner with God in His goals for creation, while rest lets us enter into communion with God in the enjoyment of His creation. In the first two chapters of Genesis, God both works and rests. God also creates people. He says, "I'll make man in our image, according to our likeness." And then He gives us the job to do. He says, "Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, the birds of the air, the cattle, all the wild animals." He gives us this job, this responsibility over creation. So it's clear that He intends us to be workers. But He intends us to be resters as well, because He gave us the pattern of the seven-day week when He created the earth, and on the seventh day He rested. So God's invitations to work and to rest negate that idea that one has to compete with the other. Oh, I've got too much work so I can't rest. Or if I rest, I won't get my work. And suddenly this battle goes on in our hearts. But we don't have to do that, because both work and rest are part of God's rhythm for how we should live, so that we are strong in body, mind and spirit. Now, our society has cultivated a mindset of resting after completing work. Now, the problem with that is that the work is never done. There'll always be more on your to-do list. There will always be more work that needs your attention. And if you only rest when your work is done, you'll never feel you have permission to rest. And probably you won't have time. This is not God's plan for rest. It's the opposite of your divine design. In Genesis, God created man during the sixth day of the creation story. And on the seventh day, God rested. Man's first full day on earth began as a day of rest. Rest was the foundation, not the reward. Rest was the place from which all work should start. And God's rhythm of living includes working from a place of rest. We feel like we earn rest, but that's not God's pattern. He says, "You come to me and fill yourself ready to go out to work." Now, we have to understand what rest means to understand this. Rest is not sleep, and rest is not recreational activity. There's nothing wrong with those things, and they're important. We need to sleep. We need to have recreational activity. But the rest that God is talking about here is communion with Him. We spend time with Him so that we are empowered to do the work we are called to do. And this sort of rest has great value. It's by definition restorative. It is explained so well in Psalm 23. "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul." That's the rest, that restoration of your soul. When rest is our foundation rather than our reward, you begin your work with a full tank, Now, sleep will address tiredness. And can I just give you a little hint here? If you sleep and then you wake up and you still feel tired, sleep is not what you needed. You need rest. And recreational activity will refresh us and reinvigorate us, but it's not going to fill our tank as rest will. We need to take time to commune with God. That's when our souls will be restored, and we will never burn out if we come from that position. And that's why I believe it's, for me, it's a daily rhythm. Every morning I start from that place of rest. I get up and I have that time of communion with God where He fills me up with wisdom and strength and hope for the day ahead. But then there's those times where we need more than just that morning hour. We need longer than that. And so that's why God talked about a Sabbath. And so we can look at Jesus' life to see how He balanced work and rest. It's not a matter of finding me time. That's not what that's about. It's a matter about being willing to be obedient to what God says is best. Unwillingness to submit to the invitation and command of God by resting may point to a deeper issue that permeates our culture. And I think this is a problem, the idolatry of busyness. Our culture has a restlessness problem, which drives us towards magnetic north. Magnetic north leads us on a restless trajectory that reinforces that our worth is found in what we do. You know, I've spent time with people in my office, sometimes half an hour or more, trying to come to agreement about what title they want on their email signature. Because for them, that defines who they are. That defines their worth. But true north leads us to the truth that our true worth is not found in what we do, which has value. I'm not saying that what we do doesn't have value. But it's actually found in what He has done for us. Because through that, we become sons and daughters of God, and we are heirs of the kingdom. What great worth that has. So how do we fight this idol of busyness? The fight doesn't come by crossing the last item off your to-do list. It's by resetting your compass to true north, which reclaims the rhythms of life that God created from the beginning of time. In the beginning, God created rhythms. On day four, He created day and night, seasons and years. And then after Adam and Eve were created, He created the seven-day rhythm of the week. God could have made a rhythmless world if He wanted, a world without days and weeks and months and years. But in His wisdom, God created rhythms to make the world a good home for us. Because He knew that we needed rest. He knew we needed refreshment. In Crazy Busy by Kevin DeYoung, he says, that's what's so concerning. Our lives are getting more and more rhythmless. We don't have healthy routines. We can't keep our feasting and fasting apart. Evening and morning have lost their feel. Sunday has lost its significance. Everything is blurred together. The faucet is a constant drip. In other words, life today looks less like Eden and more like Egypt. What do I mean by that? Well, this is really interesting. When I was reading this, I thought, this is profound. By the time we reach Exodus, we find no reference to weeks or months or seasons or years in Egypt, but only to endless sequences of work days, because the Israelites were now slaves under Pharaoh, and he just worked them every day. All day. And when Moses talked to him about letting his people go, he just worked them harder. My fear is that our current culture is stuck on magnetic north, with the boundaries between work and rest having stretched and blurred to such a degree that we can no longer identify them. We no longer need to go to the office to make our bricks. We just need Wi-Fi. And even our supposed rest time regularly falls prey to a hectic round of activities. This trajectory drives us to a rhythmless life with no time for rest. As soon as God rescues Israel, rhythms return. The first mentions of month and year appear as God commands Israel to celebrate the Exodus annually, and soon after that we find the first reference to the Sabbath. So, how do we set our compass for Eden rather than Egypt? We begin unlearning the rhythmless ways of Pharaoh and follow the pattern of the world's first week, and remember that we were made for rhythms. We were made for work and rest, a rest that restores the soul. So I'm going to invite the band to come. I want us to take time for a few moments this morning to reset our compass to true north around this. We get so caught up in the culture and it drives us to magnetic north. But Jesus wants us to understand what coming from that place of rest really means and stepping into work and experience the joy that comes from walking the Jesus way, the way that he intended for us. And so I'm going to get you to close your eyes just for a few moments, and I'm going to read Psalm 23 to you. And I want you to let this word minister to your spirit. Let God speak rest into your spirit. Let God fill you. We're depleted by all the demands of the world. But God says, come to me and I will give you rest. Because when you're yoked to me, actually your burden is light. Let him minister his grace, his peace into your heart through communing with him. So receive, let these words of his speak into your spirit this morning. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want for anything. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me. You are with me. You are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. Oh God, that refreshment that comes from your anointing. And my cup runs over. Let God fill you until you feel the overflow of his presence. And he promises you that goodness and mercy will follow you all the days of your life. And you will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.